Good morning.
Hi. That is a quite a loud mic this morning. I call the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, November 8th, 2023. Time is 9:05 a.m. We are meeting in the Denali room of the Anchorage LIO. And before we get much further, if you are on the phone with us, please mute your phone. We are getting some feedback from somebody online. I would like to remind everyone to please silence your cell phones. I am Representative Lynn Carpenter serving as chair. We have the following members present in the room: Representative Vance, Representative Josephson, Representative Tomaszewski, and Senator Kaufman. I have a number of senators calling in from various parts of the state or the world. Senator Kawasaki, are you online and can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski, are you online and can you hear me?
Yes, I am.
Vice Chair Stedman, are you online and can you hear me?
Yes.
Representative Johnson, are you online and can you hear me?
Yes, here.
I do not believe that Senator Hoffman is online, but if you are, sir, can you please speak up? And Senator Bishop and Representative Conk, I do not believe you're online either, but if you, either of you are online, please speak up. Okay, hearing none, we have a quorum to do business. Our first item on the agenda is the approval of last meeting's minutes. Representative Vance, may I please have a motion?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes for August 30th, 2023 meetings as presented.
Is there any objection in the room to approving the minutes? Is there any objection online to approving the minutes? Seeing and hearing none, the minutes from the August 30th, 2023 meeting are approved as presented. First item on the agenda is the presentation of the prior fiscal year's top audit issues from the legislative auditor. We have Chris Curtis, legislative auditor, to present. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, and I am the state legislative auditor. Today, I will be presenting the FY23 top audit issues. Please have a copy of the presentation in front of you. A few years ago, this committee adopted a new audit oversight process, and that was to encourage the resolution of audit findings. The first step in that process is for us to identify the top issues for the previous fiscal year, which is what I'll do today. The committee then asks state agencies to provide a status of corrective action, and I facilitate that process by sending letters out to the departments asking for a current status. Then the plan is for me to come back to this committee at the next meeting to summarize those responses, at which time members can decide whether they want to forward any of these audit findings to other legislative committees for continued follow-up during the next legislative session. Now, I'm going to say there's five top audit issues this year or for the previous fiscal year. Some of these are umbrella-type topics that cover multiple findings with a similar cause. And the first one is our disclaimer of opinion on the international airports. So during FY22, key accounting staff resigned or transferred, and this led the agency to contract out the accounting function. That did not probably go as planned, and the fund was unable to produce statements, draft statements for their auditors for about 9 months. This led to the auditors not being able to perform the audit timely as they rolled on to other projects. And it's my understanding that their FY22 audit is just in the final stages of being complete, so over a year late. This means that when we came in to do our audit, we were unable to rely on the outside audit, and we did not have sufficient evidence to issue an opinion, so we did what's called disclaimed an opinion for FY22. I do believe this will be a continuing issue for FY23. The The next issue is just an umbrella issue related to the various errors we found when we audited the draft statements. And the errors we note were significant enough to be material in the statements had we not identified them and correct them. I don't plan to go into detail about those findings as I have presented them in previous meetings, but for the public or anyone else that might be interested, I do list the finding numbers on this presentation. Anyone interested can pull up single audit from our website and drill down to those findings for additional information. The errors really are, we believe, a reflection of high turnover and staffing issues within the Division of Finance. They really are having a hard time hiring talent and bringing that talent, especially CPA level, into the division to help with the creation of the financial statements. Third topic is just a general umbrella topic covering the findings related to federal programs administered by the Division of Public Assistance within the Department of Health. Many of you might be aware of the struggles the department is facing right now with eligibility for food stamps and for Medicaid, recertifying Medicaid eligibility. But we've identified problems with this division for many years, and it really has to do with staffing shortages, lack of staff experience, training struggles, and just the general lack of adequate internal controls within the division. This led to findings, what we call material weaknesses, material noncompliance with 5 federal programs within the division. Those programs included Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, Low-Income Heating Assistance Program, Supplemental Nutritious Assistance Program, which is also food stamps, and then temporary assistance for needy families. So material noncompliance with all 5 of those programs. What does that mean? Well, it may mean that the federal oversight agency could take action, but it also means that from an audit perspective, we must audit those programs the next year as opposed to being on a 1 every 3 year cycle. That just compounds the staffing issues with the division because they have to interact with us in addition to doing their other duties, so it's just kind of a snowball effect. The fourth issue is partially a restatement of FY21 finding. It has to do with the new Medicaid behavioral health claims processing system that was put in place a few years ago. During FY22, the system had known logic flaws, and provider edits that were within the system were not operating correctly. The deficiencies resulted in payments to incorrect and ineligible providers, as well as payments for ineligible services and payments for services at incorrect amounts. Further, auditors found that the Medicaid eligibility system that interfaces into this claims processing system was not doing so accurately, and that led to expenditures being claimed for federal reimbursement at incorrect rates. And finally, certain behavioral health providers were not screened and enrolled in accordance with federal requirements, and this really is a public safety issue. The fifth audit issue has to do with appropriation shortfalls. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the term shortfall, that means the department may have overspent their general fund authorization. The test for this every year, we reach out to departments a few months before the end of the audit cycle. We say, hey, it looks like you may have some shortfalls based on our review of the accounting system. Please correct those. If you have to bill for revenues and you haven't done so already, please do so. If there's errors, correct the errors by processing transactions, that type of thing. Typically, agencies respond. We get rid of a lot of those, and we only have to write recommendations for the ones that have not been addressed. For FY22, the response wasn't just we found agencies didn't respond at the rate that they typically do. And we ended up with shortfall recommendations for 8 departments. Those departments include administration, law, revenue, health and social services, natural resources, public safety, environmental conservation, and transportation. And if the agencies don't correct those, they may show up in this next budget cycle as requests for ratification. The sixth audit issue relates to a performance audit on DCCED, the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development, their COVID Small Business Relief Program, which was actually administered through ADA. We had 2 recommendations made as part of that audit. First, to the commissioner to work towards recovering the unallowable grant payments identified in the audit. And secondly, to the executive director of ADA to improve some procurement procedures. And then the final top audit issue is that came out of a performance audit of the Alaska Commission for Human Rights. And that's a recommendation to improve procedures to guide the complaint resolution process, establish timelines to encourage timely resolution, and to address or continue efforts to address staffing shortages. And that those all revolve around complaints not being addressed timely. So again, the next step in this process, if the committee concurs, is that I will facilitate requesting for corrective action by sending letters to the departments. If the departments are listening, they will be asked to respond by the end of November. That will give us time to compile their responses. Last year, I brought a matrix that summarized them for your review. And then you'll make the determination of whether you want to work with additional legislative committees to further encourage follow-up and corrective action.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Are there any questions for Ms. Curtis?
I have a question. Stedman has.
I'm seeing none in the room. Are there any questions online?
Stedman has one.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious. You know, we've had all that COVID money. We had our report showing that there's looks like quite a bit of money that, you know, people didn't qualify for that they received, and we were a pass-through entity for the feds. Is the department showing any interest in dealing with this, or are they just going to ignore it? And then what should we do as our role?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I can tell you that we did get contacted by the Department of Law, and they did request additional details. And I don't know what happened after that point. So this is what we'll find out through this process as far as asking the commissioner, you know, what's the status of that corrective action.
Okay, that sounds good, because I think it'd be better to try to deal with it here at LBNA than when we get into the middle of the legislative process here in a couple months.
Question, Chair. Mm-hmm. On the same topic, is there indication from agencies within the federal government that they're going to audit monies that were given out during COVID to states at this point? Because I imagine how state of Alaska decided to use money is similar to how others, or maybe this somewhere, but the concept of lots of unaccountable monies being spent are not unique to Alaska. So I'm just curious if there's been any conversation within your sphere. Hey, we're going to be auditing.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. The state auditors, all state auditors, participated in what's called the PRAC, the Pandemic Relief Assist Overview Committee, something like that. It's a compilation of, I think, about 15 OIGs from the federal oversight agencies. And worked with state auditors, we had monthly meetings, oversight meetings, to talk about just oversight of the money. Each of those federal agencies talked about their audit, where they're at with their audits, what they're auditing, what the results have been, what types of things they're finding, what types of controls can be put in place. Way back at the beginning of that process, there was an audit, it's a desk review that included Alaska, and they have not come out with a report on that. And it did include this specific program that we audited.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In previous meetings, when you went over the statewide audit, you were talking about similar measures of just not being able to get reports done on time. A lot of the errors that you're seeing is because of being understaffed, undertrained. And is this something? We know that staffing issues has been going on across every industry, every department, for a little while now since the pandemic. In your audit findings and your conversations, are you getting a measure of the effort of each department to fulfill those positions? I know, for instance, in DPS, they've put additional measures on recruitment And so we can see a tangible effort on their part. But with the other departments, are you seeing that same level of effort and accountability for recruitment to fill these positions?
Representative Vance, we have not looked. When it comes time to what is the cause of a finding, we work with the agency and they let us know what they believe the cause is. As long as it seems reasonable, we don't spend additional audit effort to take it a step further. So the staffing shortages, you know, create a lack of experience, which is another cause. The fact that they have inadequate procedures, because procedures are really important if they have turnover, that compounds the problem. So there are things that they could put in place that would help, help them get through this time when they have high turnover. But as far as whether the state as a whole is pursuing what they're doing as far as recruiting, what efforts are they making, I don't know. I haven't noticed anything. Tell you that.
That's a good answer.
Would it be normal for the agencies to follow up with the legislative auditor when they are doing something that is directly related to a finding?
To the chair, yes, by default. There is a requirement, the federal requirement, that the next year we do this next single audit. We have to, the agency, the state as a whole, has to produce a schedule called the Summary of Prior Audit Findings. And in that schedule, they go through each outstanding audit finding and they provide a status. And we're required to audit that status. So they don't reach out for any other reason besides that we're testing that, and so we're asking about that corrective action. In that schedule, they have to say whether they've done corrective action. If not, what do they plan to do? Who's the contact person? And then we audit that to determine whether it's reasonable.
But outside that schedule of audit findings, there isn't a formal or informal process for the administration to follow up with the state auditor for what
no.
the plans are or how far they are in the progress.
To say over the years, someone may have reached out to me. We've had an off-the-record discussion about, you know, what can they do and that type of thing. But that's, I believe, the reason why you have this new oversight process in place. Is there a way to continue to encourage agencies to follow up? I mean, for the statewide audit, we have a mechanism. But for performance audits, we don't. So whether a performance audit just gets put back on the shelf and no one revisits it unless someone asks for another follow-up. This gives us a way of continuing to keep a finger on the pulse of what's being done out there as far as resolving audit findings.
I guess a final question that I would have, just for the public's clarification here, when you say if nobody follows up on it, who would have the authority to follow up or maybe the responsibility to follow up on that?
Well, I would think that would be the audit chief themselves, you know, a responsibility to follow up and resolve findings. In fact, that's, I believe, part of the engagement letter when we send it out for the single audit, and management agrees to the engagement. They're attesting to it's one of their responsibilities to follow up and resolve audit findings.
Does the legislature, through its committee process, also have a responsibility to follow up on those audit findings?
That's kind of, I think, a policy question, maybe even a legal question. I think that we'd have to dive into the law to see what that – I'm not aware of any of whether the legislators themselves are required to, even if I find something that was illegal, whether they're responsible for
– That's a good distinction, whether it's required or whether it's just good practice.
Right. Prudent.
You got it.
Policy governance, yes.
Thank you for that response. Any other comments or questions, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you. Through the chair, just to that point, I think that the intent was, as we're having our discussions around funding in every budget cycle, that we start to have a deeper discussion about performance improvements around some of the key issues. So although there's not necessarily a legislative responsibility for the improvement, there is for assuring that we are putting good money after good effort.
Thank you, Senator. Any additional comments or questions online? Hearing none. Ms. Curtis, do you have anything else? Okay, thank you. Okay, our next order of business is to go into executive session where we are going to discuss an audit release and a procurement item. Is there an objection to the executive session motion for making? I'm seeing none in the room. Is there any objection online? Okay. We will take a moment to clear the room, and I will take a brief at ease to do so. Okay, we are back on the record, and after identifying everybody in the room and everybody online, all members present have a right to be in the room as we go into executive session, and no one was representing Matt. Can I have a motion?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B3 for the discussion of matters that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following persons remain in the room or online: the Legislative Auditor and necessary staff of the Auditor, Megan Wallace, Legislative Legal Counsel and necessary staff, Kevin Cuddy, Attorney for Stoll Rives, any legislators not on the committee, staff or legislators who are members of the committee.
Okay, let's see here, before we go off record, can we have individuals online who are not the legislators identify yourself? So I'm showing that Lauren Luigi should be online. Can you please identify yourself?
I am here.
Thank you. Mr. Cuddy, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wallace, are you there?
Yes, this is Megan. I'm here.
Thank you, Megan. And the honor question, is there anybody else online that I did not call? If so, there are not.
Bishop.
Say that again.
This is Click. I just called in.
Oh, thank you, Senator Bishop. You are allowed to stay online. Perfect timing, sir.
Thank you.
Stedman's online also.
Sorry, say that one more time, please.
I said Stedman's online also. I missed if you were having the legislators online check in or not.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. I was not going to have the legislators check back in because I am sure that they are online, at least from my screen here. However, in the brief minutes we've been discussing this, it looks like Senator Keel has joined us. Sir, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And I have a note here that says that Representative Tilton is trying to join us, although I do not see her listed here. Speaker Tilton, are you online? Not yet.
Mr. Chairman, I also believe Emily Nauman from Legal Services is online and available.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you online?
Emily, I'm here. Yes.
Thank you, Emily. Take a brief of these. Come back on the record. During executive session, we discussed the funding for the Stoll Reeves contract, and we also discussed the executive session, or we discussed in executive session the audit, whether the audit will be released, audit of Department of Law will be released, and both of those require motions to proceed. Before I get ahead of myself, I just want to reconfirm the members present, since we're back on the record in the room with me, as Chair Carpenter, our Representative Vance, Representative Josephson, Representative Tomaszewski, and Senator Kaufman. And online, Senator Kawasaki, are you still with us? Senator Wilikowski, are you still with us?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Senator Stedman said that he had to leave. It looks like he is not here. Representative Johnson, are you still with us?
I'm still here, thanks.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki, are you still with us? Okay. But with the members present, I believe we still have quorum. So we will proceed with the motions. Representative Vance, can I have a motion?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve an amendment to the existing contract with Stoll Reeves dated June 6, 2023 to increase the contract amount by $100,000 for a total amount not to exceed $300,000 legal services, litigation, and appeal costs in the ongoing matter in Legislative Budget and Audit Committee versus Dunleavy et al., case number S18904 and CAN-22-0967CI, relating to the deposit of certain state taxes and royalties resulting from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission FERC decision into the general.
Is there any objection by members within the room? Is there any objection by members online? Seeing and hearing no objections, the motion passes. Representative Vance, can I have the next motion?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee release the audit on spending on contracts related to Janus Department of Law as a final public audit report.
Is there any objection to releasing the audit report for members in the room? Same question to members online. Is there any objection to releasing the audit report?
No.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, the audit report is released. Our final order of business today is a presentation from the Alaska Broadband Office. We have Director Thomas Lochner here today to present. Sir, welcome to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. You, I understand, have some slides you're going to run through. Okay, very good. Well, why don't we take a brief of these to get those up and operational, make sure we're good to go, and then we'll get you going. Okay, we're back on the record. We got about 10 minutes before the scheduled end of the meeting and a presentation that may take about 15 minutes, depending on questions if it stretches long. So with that, I'm going to ask that members hold their questions until the end, allowing you to get through your information, and then we can take questions up as long as committee members want to stay here. So, Mr. Lochner, thank you for joining us today, and please proceed.
Thank you, and I appreciate the invitation. On behalf of myself and the Alaska Broadband Office, as well as the Commissioner Sandy from the Commerce Community Economic Development, which the broadcast is under. Wanted to go through real quickly. Last year I gave a presentation, and the next slide will show what that looked like. But I wanted to bring this up because as recent as a week before it was announced, news articles were coming out saying Alaska is only going to get $400 million to $600 million. So through a lot of work from the congressional delegation and the governor's office, we were able to move the needle and educate the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, that Alaska, as Melissa Krukash, our tribal liaison, says, except in Alaska, where we have the Yukon River is not like the Mississippi River, where there's barges going up all the time, and they were confused by the fact that it froze solid for several months out of the year. So through that education, very proud of the fact that we were able to get $1 billion to build broadband in Alaska. The lower part of this chart shows the priority that the broadband office has to adhere to within the Notice of Funding Opportunity, or NOFO, under the NTIA's BEAD program, that's Broadband Equity Access and Deployment. Our charter is to make sure that the unserved locations, which is the folks who can't get 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up, get 100 megabits down and 20 megabits up by the end of the program. We will achieve that through grants. Many of you may have seen this slide last year. This slide was developed because FCC's version 1 map was terrible. It missed 64 communities within Alaska. And so the broadband office went through every single community and looked at what the offerings, the broadband offers were in every single community. I met with some of the folks on this committee last year, and they told me I was wrong. And in fact, I was wrong. And I'm okay with being wrong because we worked very diligently with a company called Dewberry and the Rasmussen Foundation to meet with the FCC and update their maps. And I would contend that their maps are about 99% correct in version 2 and continue to get better in version 3 and hopefully in version 4. When you look at the FCC's map, this is straight off the FCC's website, it looks like Alaska is doing great because blue is the indicator of serve. Take any technology and you change that radio button to all wired and fixed, licensed to fixed wireless is what the Alaska Broadband Office's charter is under the BEAD NOFO. You can see in the background, everything went gray. And then if I take off that, it looks like only the road systems have service. When we drill into each of those maps, this is the NANA. And as we drill into the maps, when we look at NANA with the marker of 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up, you can see it's about halfway served. The green dots can achieve more than 25 over 3, and the red dots cannot achieve 25 over 3. So the red dots are the unserved. When you change the marker to 100 over 20, you can see all of NANA goes red. The reason that is because while they can achieve 25 over 3, no location in NANA currently can achieve 100 megs down and 20 megs up. So the charter of the broadband office is to hit all the red dots, and then if we have funding left over, hit all the green dots. This creates a challenge where you have these mixed locations where some are unserved and some are underserved. Fortunately, most of the locations in Alaska, and I pulled up Mountain Village here, are fully unserved. We will have potential fiber projects. As the Notice of Funding Opportunity calls out, reference and a priority for fiber projects first. And then if there aren't any grant applications for fiber projects, then we can move to other technologies. The broadband office is technology agnostic, with the exception of the rules that the NTIA has set that we have to have a preference for fiber. So we anticipate, similar to the Goyon project that goes from Fort Yukon down to Tanana through the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program, this will be most likely served through a fiber and river, Yukon River is below there, and fiber throughout the community. In addition to the communities, we have a breakdown of the communities and then non-community locations. We call this location right here Patsy's Cabin. It's the only one on the FCC location that actually has a title. I thought that was interesting. And we know that these will be considered extremely high-cost threshold locations. What that means is generally it would cost a couple million bucks in fiber to get to that one location. So most likely we will not have it as a priority, a fiber priority project. It will fall into another technology. For context, I wanted to show those two, Mountain Village and Patsy's Cabin, in context on the Yukon River. You can see Mountain Village follows and is right on the Yukon River, but Patsy's Cabin is off at Slough. So most likely that location will be served with either a satellite technology or a micro technology, depending on which one is more cost effective. The rose color here is the identifier for high cost from the NTIA. High cost means that under the notice of funding opportunity, the match that is required, a 25% match, is completely waived. So as a consequence of that, in all the red areas on the map, folks can get 100 cents on the dollar. And on the non-red areas, they can only get 75 cents on the dollar. They have to contribute at least 25% to the project. And as you can see, most of those locations are on bird systems, so it would be easier to build. The North Slope is different in that the Quintillion fiber has created an opportunity for most of those villages to already be built and the remainder to have projects already. Zooming in on Nenana, this is the National Broadband Access Map, or NBAM map, from the NTIA. You can see they've broken it down by unserved and underserved and served. There are no green dots there, and it's just easier to see. And this is the map that the broadband office will be using when we put out the grant opportunities for folks to bid on. Looking at Anchorage, Anchorage has all four of the different categories. And just a refresher on the categories, there are the high-cost areas, which are the red areas and have no match, the non-high-cost areas, which have no color indicator, and then the broadband office has looked at the extremely high-cost threshold locations within the non-high-cost areas, and those are in the white polygons, and what we will be doing is asking for a waiver from the 25% match because those are so remote. Fairbanks I bring up because while it showed served on the original map, you can see that it is clearly about 50-50. So we will be putting out grant projects to have all of those red dots turn green. Another location similar, the Kenai area. We originally thought it was served, but when we looked at the maps in detail, it is clear that it is not served, so we will put out projects to have all of these red dot locations served. Timing on all of this is the red line is where we are today. We have submitted our five-year action plan, and that's posted on the NTIA's website. We have had our initial proposal done by the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and they've done a spectacular job of helping us develop that grant. They have a full grant team, and so we will matrix into there to draw on that expertise. That will go in front of our leadership for review and then out for public comment. And then we will file that with the NTIA, and then they will have their review, which is this blank spot here, the review by the NTIA. Once they approve it, it starts what's called the final proposal, where we then put all of the grant opportunities out to the public for bid, and we have 365 days to run award and start disseminating money under that grant program. That's the end of my prepared remarks. This is the team, and feel free to contact us through the Ledge Liaison, or Legislature Liaison, and we are happy to answer any questions.
Any for questions within the committee? Are there any questions online? I'm hearing none online. I'll give you a second. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Director Lochner. So first priority is the unserved 25 megabytes and 3 upload. You can move those to 120. So basically moving them to the second priority. Where is the second priority going to be moved to?
The second priority can reach 25 over 3, but cannot reach 100 over 20. So the unserved and the underserved, the move is to get all of them to 100 over 20.
Okay.
So they might be able to reach 50 if they're underserved.
Got it. And one follow-up. With the 25% funding match, where's that coming from? Is that state dollars?
And I apologize, Chairman Carpenter, through the chair. The match would come from the subgrantees. So if it's a ISP or if it's new entrant or if it's tribal, those matches would come from their coffers.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? I have a couple. Has Congress already appropriated total sum that's allocated or that we think is coming to Alaska?
Yes.
With regard to the other dollars that have been appropriated by Congress for broadband within the state of Alaska, that the state of Alaska legislature has no purview over how they are spent. You just said that an awardee may be a tribe, and I'm thinking about some of the villages that you have shown in your banana or whatever. You pick it. We can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What tribes are represented in that location of underserved individuals? And what is the communication or coordination for the projects between the state's allocated or appropriated money and tribes appropriated money for those particular projects? You had said that perhaps tribes could be one of the recipients of state grants. Under what circumstances would they receive money from the state and money from the feds?
Outstanding. There is a robust set of conversations happening between not only the tribal side of NTIA, but the BEAD side of NTIA and the USDA to do a deconfliction process so that we don't have double funding of projects. If a tribal entity has the ability under the BEAD program to have a sustainable project for 20 years and hasn't received, it's location-based. So if the community hasn't received a grant in the past, they can apply. In this area up in the Norton Sound, those grants are through the USDA to a company called FastWire. And so those locations are now deconflicted off of both tribal broadband connectivity round 2, which is the tribal side, and the broadband equity access. So there's the conversation at the Alaska Broadband Office and the federal entities are having to make sure that we have the deconfliction and it's not simplified. Does that respond to your question?
I think so. And I I appreciate that. I mean, the obvious question is we don't want to double fund for projects. I guess the question would be for, and you said it was location specific, if we take any underserved area that, and you highlighted like Nanana that had some served and some underserved in that population. There may also be multiple tribes within that population.
Correct.
I don't know. I'm just, it's possible. So the question would be if the tribes are, have been appropriated their own money and tribal members are living within unserved areas within that location, does the state have an obligation with their money to bring up those tribal members' broadband service to served at the same time that they also have money from the federal government directly to the tribes, but not specifically earmarked to that location? Is that maybe it's clear in my mind the question was, but I can try to rephrase if you need me to.
If there is funding from the federal government that is not specific for broadband, I don't know that the Alaska Broadband Office would have visibility into that, and there's the potential to, if it still shows as unserved, we would fund the infrastructure projects to bring that unserved location to a status of served. We know about the other broadband projects that the federal government is funding, but if there's non-specific funds that are coming to the village to, and the tribe to build, we wouldn't see that.
Okay. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is any of this $1 billion being used to for satellite services, just broadband? Because, for instance, Starlink, it has been transformed, and I've been in my district, and it's, you know, immediate. Is that something that is being utilized in some of these areas?
The broadband office has a charter through the Notice of Funding Opportunity to have that preference for and priority for fiber. But in the extremely high-cost locations of Patsy's Cabins, there's about 25,000 of them. Those are exempted from that priority and will move to any other technology. The broadband office is technology agnostic. Our focus is on the broadband serviceable location and making sure that they can get at least 100 over 20 for the next 10 to 20 years. So whatever technology can best do that on a sustainable basis, the broadband office will look at all of the grants and make the decisions. So to answer your question plainly, satellite is in, but it has to follow through the grant program and be scored like all the other technologies.
Any questions from members online? It seems and appears that we have no more questions. So I will say thank you for your presentation. It's been informative. I'm sure we will continue the conversation in the next legislative session. Appreciate you coming today. So I think we've reached the end of our agenda. I want to thank all the members for their participation today, both in person and online. And this concludes the legislative budget and audit meeting today. We are adjourned as of 11:09 a.m.